And welcome to It Had to Be Said. In this episode, we are going to take a look at vaccine passports in the United States, as well as U.S. government involvement in vaccines, and give a little history lesson to give context to what might be new proposals involving a COVID passport. So this is a hot topic, of course. It's from everywhere. Starting at the Chan boards, where this is all a Jewish conspiracy, of course, going up through Telegram and into your aunt's or mother's Facebook page. And, you know, I'm not quite sure why it's such a hot topic. I've even seen congressional Republicans attempting to draft legislation that is not needed and won't go anywhere, obviously to grandstand. But let's take a look at it anyway here. So some background on what's happening now, our current state with COVID passport. Okay, so what are current state facts involving a COVID passport or COVID vaccine passport? Well, there aren't many in the real world. Tuesday, April 6th, Dr. Fauci was on a podcast, a Politico Dispatch podcast, and he said in quotes, "I doubt that the federal government will be the main mover of a vaccine passport concept. The federal government may be involved in making sure things are done fairly and equitably, but I doubt if the federal government is going to be leading an element of that." White House press secretary has said federal vaccination databases or a federal mandate requiring everyone to obtain a single vaccination credential is not going to happen. The government is not now, nor will be, supporting a system that requires Americans to carry a credential. And this is from The Hill. Mike Ryan, the executive director of the World Health Organization's Emergencies Program, said he's concerned such a requirement could exacerbate vaccine equity issues. "We already have a huge issue of vaccine equity in the world. The imposition of requirements for certification of vaccination before travel could introduce another layer of such inequality. If you don't have access to vaccine in a country, you could become isolated as a country as vaccine passports kick in." So we have Dr. Anthony Fauci saying this isn't going to happen at a federal government level. We have White House press secretary saying in very clear terms, no, the federal government is not going to be involved in this. And then we also have executive director from the World Health Organization saying that that organization isn't going to be involved in this either, all due to different concerns from the Biden administration. It seems to be concerns over personal liberties or personal information, while the World Health Organization noted that poor communities or nations would be adversely affected if vaccine availability is limited. So, you know, one question would be, what's, you know, where is this concern coming from? And that's a question I'm not going to go down in this podcast, because that's a whole other path. But I think that we know basically where it's coming from, speaking generally. These things are started on message boards and Chan boards, which are overtly, you know, racist, and their conspiracies are out and out racist or anti-Semitic, and then they get filtered down through different social networks for the normies and you know, more public facing things for Twitter and Facebook and all the folks that get soft pilled there. But you know, there's also politics in play with this as well, with Republicans and Democrats. It's a whole conversation, but not one for this podcast. The concerns, and there are legitimate concerns. Some of them are conflicting, but the concerns are really less about the government and, you know, federal government, I suppose, or an international organization mandating some type of COVID vaccine passport, as it is more likely to be private businesses. And you know, the reasons could range from safety of employees to public image to marketing. So, you know, some of it is for money, some of it is for actual concern. Although even actual concern can turn into money, especially if your employer sponsors a health plan for you and you end up getting sick and missing days. CNET came out with a story today that focused on travel companies, specifically cruise lines and airlines, and how they're leading the effort, or at least leading the investigation into possibilities about some type of vaccine passport. However, this would likely impact tourist industries in general, I would think. And so by extension, hotels, restaurants, amusement parks, and of course, any kind of stock holdings that would be associated with those groups. There is no consensus on how this would work, but it seems like it would be some type of digital QR with a binary yes or no. Now, I can tell you that while it sounds simple, that type of scenario could potentially be highly complicated. And it's not the build for that, it's a very simple interface or program that they're talking about. But, you know, I would assume that hospitals or healthcare providers would not want to be involved in this due to patient health information concerns. But instead, patients would request their records and then pass them on to a third party to verify or upload to some type of third party app themselves. And since this wouldn't be a government effort either, but private sector, I could just see many people who aren't health professionals trying to figure out how to verify this information, make sure it's accurate, and also keep it in a way that's encrypted and safe. So that's the complicated part. How would you operationalize this? And you know, also that being said, there's also the lucrative industry of selling personal data and information too. So, you know, this is a new concept for today in this form, even though it's an old idea. Anytime there's a new concept in the private sector, you know, government regulation generally has to catch up to it. So that would be a concern with that too. You know, what could happen in the short term with lack of oversight or regulation for things that we don't know yet. It's all conjecture, but there are some private companies that are currently working on such an app. The International Air Transport Association being one, which is really like a trade group of many different airlines. However, I still can't wrap my mind around how patient health information would be protected. Well, also documentation from a patient that's being uploaded, you know, would be verified as not fraudulent. Digital health pass is another dimension. And again, at a certain point, any scheme is going to rely on people that aren't health professionals, although I'm sure that there are, I'm sure there'll be a lucrative industry for consultants to come in. But even so, I just doubt there's gonna be health information professionals. Because that's just not as sexy as having a doctor. But honestly, a doctor doesn't really understand the dissemination of patient health information as well as a release of information person that might work at a front desk. So, you know, perhaps there might be stiff fines or penalties around, you know, fraudulent documentation that would deter some people. Or it just might be a reality that people are going to do nefarious things. And at a certain point, statistics will bear out that the benefits would outweigh any shortcomings. But I would find it difficult, again, to bypass fraud, right? So all that being said, the whole vaccine, right? The discussion around vaccine passports really come from people that don't want to get vaccinated. Now, there might be some people that have patient health information concerns who are vaccinated, but the loud and proud, the people that are posting inaccurate things all over your your aunt's or your grandmother's Facebook page with American flags and stuff on it. You know, these are people that don't want to get vaccinated. And this isn't going to be a history of vaccination. This is going to be about vaccine passports. But just briefly, you know, you're here, so listen anyway. It's good info. Vaccines aren't new. So, you know, you have vaccination and then you have inoculation. And vaccination is a little bit different, but inoculation is essentially vaccination, but a little bit more dangerous. And that's been going on for thousands and thousands of years, right? I mean, smallpox is the one that seems to be the oldest, where it was essentially sores from people that had the disease were like dried and ground up and inhaled, right? Or inserted in a needle. And that practice goes back to 1000 BC China. So the concept of inoculating yourself via virus or vaccinating yourself is 3000 years old, right? 1000 BC at least. Vaccine passports aren't new either. And it seems that there are a few good articles that are public facing about this concept, but there aren't many. Unfortunately, reluctance to vaccinate has always been a factor, right, in the evolution of vaccination, which is why we need vaccine passports in the first place. And that's why it's a pertinent topic to discuss in this conversation. Know this. The next time that you see one of these posts, again, from your aunt or, you know, someone that you went to schools with, mother, and it has the bald eagle and, I don't know, a cowboy or something, you know this. George Washington was inoculated. Okay. George Washington took a smallpox vaccination to overcome fear among Americans. Now, he did it for himself, but he did it publicly facing so that other Americans would see their leader, the guy that led them to victory over the British as a general and became the first president of the United States, that he was going to get vaccinated. And he did it purposefully to inform the public that this is something that is good and that we should do. And George Washington, like many people who end up before science really latches on to the modern concepts of vaccination, you know, many of the earlier people that understood it were in the military because they understood what diseases do to large groups of people when they're confined in places that are not necessarily sanitary, AKA the military. The Library of Congress has great resources on George Washington's inoculation and the country's first mass vaccination program, which occurred under General George Washington. So there's that. But we can go further back. Washington wasn't the first well-known American to become inoculated. Cotton Mather was largely credited with introducing inoculation to the colonies. And he did a great deal to promote the use of the method as standard for smallpox prevention. If you're from the Northeast, you know Cotton Mather. If you're not, you probably don't. But know this, we're talking about the 1700s. This is before the United States is the United States. It's before the US was a country that Cotton Mather has already introduced the concept of smallpox prevention. And it might surprise you to hear that the US has already had vaccine passports as well. We also had periods in time where vaccination was mandatory. The smallpox outbreak in the late 1800s and early 1900s is a unique case study because it provides historical context and lessons learned. And there's also something unique about smallpox, which we'll get to. As expected, and as I mentioned, some people in this time period forged medical records to bypass vaccination for mostly religious reasons. However, vaccination was still a new medical procedure and it left a scar. So whether you were vaccinated or not, you would have physical images, scars on your body. If you were vaccinated, you would have a scar from your vaccination, like a scratch. If you had smallpox, and so antibodies, most people would have scars in their body from the disease that they survived it. And so along with this scratch that you'd have from vaccination and the smallpox leaving the symptoms or leaving images of the disease after symptoms had subsided, many U.S. businesses, again, late 1800s, early 1900s, required you to show these scars to do things like gain entrance to a theater, for instance. Michael Wilreich, a history professor at Brandeis University and author of Pox in American History, said that the vaccine site, and we're talking again about smallpox, 1800s, 1900s, the vaccine site would become more and more irritated. A scab would form and fall off. And what was left behind was a small scar, roughly the size of a nickel. And that's how you know that the vaccination took. PBS has some great lesson plans for teachers that provide basic info on this type of vaccination history in the United States. One such plan includes the origin of vaccine passports in the US, or at least the idea of them. Now we'll see that it actually goes back further, but this is, I think, the first modern concept. So this is a quote. Vaccination should be the seal on the passport of entrance to the public schools, to the voting booth, to the box of the jurymen, and to every position of duty, privilege, profit, or honor in the gift of either the state or the nation. So this is of that time era we're talking about, late 1800s, early 1900s. Many employers from logging companies in Maine that was documented to steel mills in Pennsylvania required employees to show evidence of vaccination via scar or become vaccinated prior to employment. So it was a contingency for employment. Points of entry, such as the famous Ellis Island, also required evidence of vaccination, or people were subject to vaccination on the spot. U.S. border officials were also reported to have demanded evidence of such vaccination as early as 1885. So these are not new ideas. The idea of providing evidence of inoculation, vaccination, in order to gain employment, gain movement. We're talking about the 1800s and early 1900s in the United States. There is a history of individual states also authorizing compulsory vaccination during outbreaks. Of course, and some of those stories are what might be shocking to people, very close to forced vaccination, where you would have public health officials going house to house in certain areas where there are outbreaks and demanding to see evidence of vaccination. But of course, you know, what we're probably most familiar with in terms of a compulsory vaccination and one that's lasted is public schools. Or if you go to a state university and you want to stay in a dorm room, you're required to show evidence of vaccination. Time magazine had a great article discussing a history of vaccination relating to smallpox. And in it, they discuss vaccine hesitancy in the late 1800s. And this is interesting because, again, social media, conspiracies, the age of Trump, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm going to read a little bit from that article because it's I think, might be insightful for people in 2021 to hear how people in the late 1800s thought about anti-vaxxers. Much of the American public viewed this hesitancy as a relic of a bygone, unenlightened age. In 1893, a Raleigh newspaper carried an account of an elderly man recalling with undisguised scorn the anti-vaxxers of earlier decades who believed that childhood vaccines would lead young people to develop bovine propensities, to fancy way of saying turn into cows. Some, he remembered, regarded the vaccination scar that we talked about as a means for traveling, crossing borders, gaining employment, as a mark of the beast, referencing the Bible and the book of Revelations. Of course, there's plenty of people doing that today, unfortunately. And despite any backlash, stringent enforcement of smallpox vaccination requirements successfully pressured vaccine hesitant populations to accept them. Though some groups continue to resist these public health campaigns, far more Americans acquiesced to vaccination rather than endanger their employment, mobility, or their child's education. So that's all from this really great article. But you know, this is a time in world history, but specifically U.S. history, after the Civil War, where industry is growing throughout the country, and this is Reconstruction of the South. And so factories are moving into where plantations used to be. And there's a great deal of industry occurring, and with that innovation. So it's makes sense that people in that time might see people that are essentially, you know, anti-science, denying science, as this old relic, you know, of the past. There are some benchmarks to consider. So I'm not going to go through these because it would be a whole history lecture, but just some things to be aware of. If you're talking to somebody that is, has an issue with any kind of government involvement in vaccines. So the timeline for this starts in 1792 in the United States. The Commonwealth of Virginia passed an act to consolidate previously passed acts. So previously passed, meaning before 1792, regulating smallpox inoculation into one specific act. The new act included a penalty of $1,500, which back then would be quite a bit, or a 6 month imprisonment for anyone willfully spreading smallpox in a manner other than specified by the act. So that's a fancy way of saying that if you didn't get vaccinated and you knew that you were sick and you were walking around in public, you could go to jail, because most people weren't going to be able to pay that penalty. 1802, Massachusetts becomes the first US state to encourage use of vaccination against smallpox. Dr. Waterhouse, the first doctor in Boston to obtain vaccine material, convinced the city's Board of Health to sponsor a public test of vaccination. 19 volunteers were successfully vaccinated. So 1802. 1813, U.S. vaccine agency is established. So 1813, right? The War of 1812 is occurring. The White House burned down the War of 1812. The U.S. Congress authorized and James Madison, signed an act to encourage vaccination, establishing a national vaccine agency. James Smith, a physician from Baltimore, was appointed the national vaccine agent. So the Civil War hasn't even happened yet. 1855, vaccination law passes. Massachusetts passes the first US law mandating vaccination for school children. 1855. 1902, the Biologics Control Act. US Congress passed an act to regulate the sale of viruses, serums, toxins, and analogous products, later referred to as the Biologics Act. This was the first modern federal legislation to control the quality of drugs. This act emerged in part as a response to a contamination event in St. Louis. The act created the Hygienic Laboratory of the U.S. Public Health Services to oversee manufacturing of biological drugs, aka vaccines. 1902. 1905, the U.S. Supreme Court addresses vaccination. The U.S. Supreme Court, in the case of Jacobson versus Massachusetts, upheld the constitutionality of mandatory smallpox vaccination programs to preserve the public health. So there's more, of course there's more, but I think what I'd want to impress upon people is that the idea of the US government being involved in vaccination predates the existence of the United States, going back to the colonies and individual states and commonwealths. The first president of the United States was involved in this all throughout the 1800s and 1900s. Essentially, vaccine passports existed in the past, and you couldn't get around it because there were physical scars, right? Scarification. So the US government has been in the vaccine business, and technically it's been so before the Constitution existed. People often cite the Constitution in questionable, sometimes often incorrect ways, involving hyperbole or misunderstanding of what's actually in the Constitution. But the US government, or at least state governments, the colonists were involved in sponsoring vaccination, overseeing creation of vaccines, inoculations, essentially public service announcements, George Washington, before the Constitution even existed. And I mentioned George Washington again. Of course, he participated in a public inoculation to try and ease concerns people had over inoculation for smallpox. Mandated inoculation and vaccination occurred throughout the 1800s. And vaccine passport schemes have existed in numerous forms, starting prior to and after the turn of the 20th century. So yes, this has been around for a long time. The United States government has been involved in it for a long time. It's not something new. It's not some type of tyrannical form of government, unless you're trying to say that George Washington was a tyrant. And if you want to, that's fine. I can have that conversation. But the people that literally wrote the Constitution, James Madison, the Federalist Papers, sponsored vaccination development, vaccination programs, inoculation programs. And that's the point that I think we need to be clear about. It's one thing to have concerns over personal health information, and especially in a digitized form, I get that. I get that in a deep way because I have a meaningful background in this type of technology. And that's one discussion that's valid. What's not valid is all the conspiracy crap. And this whole idea that this is like somehow new, that this is some global thing, right? That this is some big pharma, new world order, whatever the fuck these people say. Okay, that's just being immature. That's not wanting to deal with a reality that you don't like. And so you're coming up with stories that self-aggrandize and make you seem like you know more than everybody else. In fact, the next time you're called a Nazi, because you will be, so the next time you're called a Nazi or a foot soldier for government tyranny, let the person know that the wellness influencer who told them this on Instagram might want to be made aware of the fact that the very soldiers who stormed Normandy to defeat Nazism were vaccinated. In January 1942, immediately following Pearl Harbor, the US military decided to vaccinate all active duty personnel with yellow fever vaccine. Also in 1942, all military personnel received typhoid, smallpox, and tetanus vaccines. Soldiers who refused vaccination were court-martialed. So, sometimes these analogies just don't stick.